Hello and welcome to Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf. Talking.Golf is a weekly podcast featuring Gary D'Amato and Rob Hernandez. And now, talking all things golf in Wisconsin, here's Gary and Rob.
Can you believe it? It's the last week of February. In fact, the final hours of February, and it's Talking.Golf. I'm Rob Hernandez. He's Gary D'Amato. We've both been busy in different ways here today. Gary chasing down a story that you'll see on Wisconsin.Golf tomorrow about the site of a future Wisconsin State amateur. And I was out at Westbrook Village Golf Club in Peoria, Arizona today for the Westbrook Invitational hosted by the Wisconsin Badger women's golf team. We'll talk about that in a second. We'll also talk about Harrison Ott coming close at a Monday qualifier for the PGA Tour event this week down in Palm Beach Gardens, Florida. And then later in the podcast, we will talk about Wisconsin's place as the number one state in the nation, I guess, that with the number of top 10 courses in the Golf Digest rankings. And it makes sense, folks, because with all the weather we've had, a lot of those, a lot of the courses, maybe not in those rankings, but certainly ranking high with people this year because you can play golf on those courses here in February. We'll get to that. But let's welcome in Gary D'Amato. Gary, we got to start with the Badger women. I'm sorry, it was strange. Last year, I went out there to Westbrook Village, and the Badgers, with a very experienced team, including Emily Lauterbach and I believe Mackenzie Hahn was still a senior last year, they finished last in the tournament they've hosted every year out there. And this year, they go 276, 284, and a school record 270. They actually broke the school record yesterday by shot with the 276, and today, a 270 led by junior Chloe Chan out of, and she shot a final round at 65 to win the individual title by one shot. I didn't have the Badgers playing this well on my bingo card, my friend.
Goodness gracious, Rob. I'm looking at the scores right now. And in the back nine at Westbrook Village Golf Club, they had 14 birdies, one bogey, and a double. They shot 11 under as a team on the back nine. Really, really impressive. I'm looking at the scorecards, and they're all lit up with red, Rob. Pretty impressive.
It was, and Kansas won the tournament with a 43 under par, 821. Oklahoma, 37 under, 827. And then the Badgers, third with 34 under, 830. 18 under par today. They nipped South Florida, which finished fourth for the low round of the day. You know, it's weird, Gary. You know, we've been covering college golf for a long time. Let's kind of go through the dynamics here. The number one golfer in the lineup this week was Carly Carter. Last year, Gary, she competed as an individual in this tournament. That doesn't happen where you go from basically out of lineup to number one, and she's been number one several tournaments this year. The other one today, if you look down at the number five spot, Camille Kuznick, a young lady out of Minnesota, this is her first time in the top five in her college career. She is a junior. She shoots 400 par 64 today, and that included two bogeys. And that was a big reason why they were able to get so far under par. And then you get a 67 from Kate Brody. Probably should have talked to Kate. I mean, she was bogey-free today. And she's, you know, part of a bright future. I mean, she's just a freshman for the Badgers. And with what they've got coming in, it's going to be fantastic. And then Chloe Chan, 65. Vanessa Ho with a 73 gets... That score gets thrown out. How often have we seen a Wisconsin golf team, men or women, with a 73 as the throwout score?
Yeah, you're right, Rob. Just really impressive. You know, a couple of these young women have been obviously working hard on their games. And then, yeah, Kate Brody coming in as a freshman and doing that. Kate and Chloe Chan, both bogey-free. How often here's another question, Rob. How often do you see two players in a lineup in a college women's golf tournament playing bogey free on the same team?
You
doesn't
don't
happen often.
No, you don't. It just and you know, I know that Westbrook Village can be set up different ways, but you know, I was out there and I saw that, you know, the whole locations, you know, I mean, they weren't easy. They you know, the course played to 6,200 yards, which is, you know, fairly you know, that's about average for Division I women's college golf. There was one hole, Gary, out there that was one that they really attacked, and that was the par 4 15th hole. It lists at 270. I bet you they looked like the tees were up today, and it looked like it played about 250, and they were waiting to go for it. And most of the women that I saw go through with those top five teams. And the funny thing is, and Todd Erlein, you know, couldn't explain it. The five golfers in the lineup shot combined to shoot one under on a par four that measured 250 yards. On the next hole, a 183-yard par three, they went three under. It was weird. And then Chloe Chan pars. First of all, she pars the par five 14th hole, which a lot of women were birdieing. Pars that short par four 15th hole, and then goes birdie, par, birdie, birdie as she makes the turn. She started in the shotgun, start on four. I heard her say she topped her second shot on number three to finish, and then gets up and down to save par. So, I mean, it was just one of those special days for the Badger women. And, you know, again, after finishing last a year ago, and again, the weather here was pretty good, Gary. I mean, we didn't have a whole, you know, it was mostly cloudy, nice and warm, not a lot of wind. So you were firing darts. If you notice the last place team in the field, North Carolina Wilmington, shot one over today, 289. I think might have been the only over par score in the entire week, and they finish at three under. So I don't know. It just, you know, college golf is getting good, but this is exceptional.
It is exceptional, Rob. I'm seeing that the Badger women played four different holes three under, which is another thing you don't see very often on either men or women. And, you know, you mentioned it before we started the podcast that this is a very young team, or not young maybe, but everyone's going to come back, right? It's pretty heavily junior-laden lineup, right?
It's mostly juniors, and then Kate Brody, a freshman, and the only senior in the program right now is Gia Feliciano, she wasn't part of the group that was here at in Arizona. She played earlier this year. I think she's played one match, so she graduates, and then they bring in Izzy Stricker out of Wanakee, the two-time defending state champion, obviously the daughter of Steve Stricker, and Lauren Salmon, a young lady who I had the opportunity to coach against when I was still living in California, coaching high school golf. And as a freshman in our COVID year, that year that we played in the spring, I mean, you know, she came on the scene. I think she won our conference championship, our league finals, multiple times, got to the state finals, which is not easy in California. It's not, there's one division about, you know, maybe a couple dozen kids get there, and was just so physically advanced. You know, I go back to the days when I covered high school basketball at the State Journal, and when I first saw Misty Bass out of Janesville Parker, you know, three-time Wisconsin Miss Basketball, and how she was so much different as a freshman than anybody I'd seen in that sport. Lauren Salmon the same way. She's battled some back problems, but I understand, you know, those are starting to get resolved. So she should come in, you know, fresh, and, you know, you aren't going to get a better competitor than Izzy Stricker. And you've got, you know, legitimately now, you know, because Alexia Seal, who we talked about last year out of Fort Mill, South Carolina, you know, she shot, you know, what normally would be three really good rounds for a college women's golf tournament. And, you know, this time, you know, this week, 76, 73, 75, I saw her birdie a hole late in the round. And, you know, that's not bad. And so, they've got legitimately six gals, seven maybe, you know, in this thing that, you know, have averages about 74 or better. And, you know, right now, things are looking up. I don't know necessarily what this will do for the ranking, but, you know, they needed to beat a lot of teams, and, you know, because you've got to, you know, have an above 500 record against all the teams that you compete against in order to even be considered for an at-large berth. And when you finish ahead of 11 in this field, after finishing fourth down at Florida Atlantic to start the spring season, I think the Badgers are well on their way to some pretty good stuff. But, you know, two of the gals said, Gary, that, you know, it was really just a matter of clearing their heads, not overthinking things. Camille Kuznick said that yesterday she was, you know, firing darts at the pins but couldn't make a putt, and she was just overreading them. And today she just kind of, you know, got a better line and made a whole bunch. And, you know, this year Carly Carter said that she has really cleared her mind of the things that you know, like we all battle. I mean, what am I going to do on this shot? You know, you and I probably, Gary, are the Eeyores of golf, where we always think, what's going to go wrong on this one? And you can't play like that if you're going to compete at the level these ladies are competing at. And I think that's what they've sort of figured out.
Yeah, I don't think, judging by the scores here and all that red, all the birdies, I don't think there were too many negative thoughts going through the players' heads today, or in this tournament, in the whole tournament. Hats off, man, they played great.
And, just want to, you know, mention too, as we, wrap up our talk here about the Westbrook Invitational, but, I had a chance to meet, Todd Erlein's, first year assistant, Morgan Baxendale, and, she, comes to the Badgers after a very decorated career at Vanderbilt University. She tried to play a little bit on, the Women's All Pro Tour, the East Coast Women's Pro Tour and the Epson Tour. And, just a really positive, assistant coach. And, Todd's had a good run of those kind of coaches, working with him. But, Morgan, you know, really seemed to relate well to the golfers on the team. And, you know, there was just this certain positive energy. And again, you know, different years, different teams, different situations, different results. It just, whatever it is, this team seems to have a little something special going. And maybe it's a little bit about building, you know, for the future too. Sometimes, Gary, when you know that you've got good talent coming in, you want to maximize what's going on right here. And like you said, with the number of these juniors, I mean, you get to be a junior in college, Gary. If you haven't figured it out by now, it's going to be a long last 2 years. But Carly Carter's a junior. Chloe Chan's a junior. Vanessa Ho out of San Diego is a junior. Camille Kuznick is a junior, and she just played her first match in the varsity lineup. To me, that bodes pretty well for what's ahead for the Badgers.
Yeah, this is a team that's going to bear watching the rest of the spring, Robin, and definitely as we go into the future, especially when they get Izzy and the other recruits in, and they have that inter-team competition, which is going to, looks like it's going to be fierce. So, go Badgers, right?
Yeah, go Badgers is right. I mentioned Morgan Baxendale played at Vanderbilt. She happened to play the exact same 4 years that Harrison Ott out of Brookfield, was, on the men's team over there. And I bring that up because the other big news out of the day, Harrison Ott shot a 400 par 68 today at the Monday qualifier for the Cognizant Classic. He won a pre-qualifier last week to get in, and that 400 par, one shot out of a 2-4, 6-for-1 playoff for the final spot in the PGA Tour event. Robert Garrigues, a PGA Tour veteran, with a 700 par 65, gets the medalist honors, but one shot away, Gary. We know that Harrison Ott is close, and we like what we've seen from Harrison Ott, Thomas Longbella. You know, they've really come out and hit the mini tours hard since their eligibility was up at Vanderbilt and Minnesota, respectively.
Yeah, you know, Harrison just has to keep knocking on that door, Rob. It's a cliche, but he's been close a number of times now in one shot. In the qualifier, Monday qualifier today. You walk away from it. There's two ways to walk away from a day like that. You walk away maybe sometimes kicking yourself over a four footer you missed or a strategic decision you made that cost you a stroke. But the positive is you walk away saying, you know, I'm one stroke away from potentially playing in a PGA Tour event. So, and I'm sure knowing Harrison, he's going to be focusing more on the positive side than the negative for sure.
So 6 birdies, 2 bogeys today for Harrison Ott. He was in very distinguished company, one shot out of the playoff. Austin Lemieux, who is the son of Mario Lemieux, the hockey legend. And, before Gary and I came on the podcast, we were looking this up. He was a hockey player here in the Valley at Arizona State. And then apparently last year decided to stop skating and pursue professional golf. Now, he entered this qualifier as an amateur, so he has not yet turned professional. But we've talked about that. There's some people that have tried that, but to come within one shot, I can't imagine he's played in many Monday qualifiers, Gary.
No. Yeah, and, you know, I believe his dad, I believe Mario was a really good player too. I think he entered a lot of that celebrity stuff and did really well. You know, he was a fine player. So the acorn doesn't fall far from the tree. And of course, you've got the hockey move, which is, I think, a better move for golf than a baseball swing, Rob.
Yeah, I would agree. And, you know, we've seen so many great, Jerry Kelly grew up playing hockey
and
he was able to, parlay that into a pretty good career swinging a different stick. And then, how do you explain this though? 61-year-old Gene Sowers was 6-under par going to the last hole, and he doubled number 18 to finish with Harris Annett and Austin Lemieux at 4-under par. We've enjoyed our interactions with Gene Sowers at the American Family Insurance Championship because he's been in contention a couple times. I feel bad for Gene. And, you know, a lot of these guys right now are when the senior tour is off, as they are this week, they start moving west. And, after last week's event, he would have been the oldest guy, I believe, to Monday qualify for a PGA Tour event is what Ryan French said.
Wow. And you know, Rob, we've known him at the AmFam Championship, but heck, I remember he had a couple pretty good runs at the U.S. Bank Championship, the old GMO. I think he was in contention once or twice, and that tournament ended in 2009. So, yeah, he's long in the tooth, but obviously can still play. That's a tremendous effort from him on a Monday qualifier for an older guy, Rob.
Yeah, absolutely. And, it goes to, you know, that with the designated events, and Ryan French and the Monday Q Info account is so good at telling these stories. These are the Cinderella stories. I mean, you know, we joke about Cinderella stories because of Caddyshack, but, the events that still have the Monday qualifiers are precious. And this used to be the Cognizant used to be one of the big ones because this is the start of the Florida swing. So many, many tour professionals live in Florida because, there is no state income tax and they're able to, make the dollars they do earn stretch, a lot further. It's fun to wake up on a Monday, especially, and I should mention too that, not only was, Harris Annett in the field, but, former Badger Griffin Barella was also in the field and, he shot 2-over-par 74. Finishing at T61, and he's done pretty well for himself, too, and shows a lot of promise. He won a pre-qualifier with a 65 last week, I believe it was, to get in this thing. So we've got that going on, and then we've got Thomas Longbella making his Korn Ferry Tour debut. He's tried to qualify for a bunch. He's every one that he's tried to qualify for, Gary. He's shot 69 or better, and he actually tried to qualify for this Argentine Open that he was in, and then wound up getting in on his status as a finalist at Q School. So he'll have an opportunity this week to maybe, determine where he plays this summer. It only takes 1 week, my friend.
Exactly. It's a huge opportunity for Thomas. I mean, make a cut, climb up the leaderboard a little bit, and who knows how many doors that can open and what that gets you into going forward. But, yeah, I would imagine he got in on the status because probably a lot of guys who have status don't want to go down to Argentina and play. So it's a big opportunity for Thomas here.
Yeah, and so we'll watch that. That starts, I believe, Thursday. And let me see. I also wanted to mention, I ran it, Emily Lauterbach and Mackenzie Hahn were out watching the golf today, and they'll be getting going on their seasons here very soon. Emily Lauterbach entered in a couple of Monday qualifiers on the LPGA Tour with her Epson Tour status, and Mackenzie Hahn looking forward to the Women's All-Pro Tour. She was hoping to get in some Cactus Tour events, but believe it or not, Gary, not a lot of interest in the Cactus Tour events among the women's mini tour professionals down here, so a lot of those are getting canceled. But one thing Mackenzie did say was that we'll follow up with her brother Jordan. But this whole transition from PGA Tour Latino America and PGA Tour Canada to the PGA Tour Americas has really caused a lot of confusion. And Jordan didn't think he was going to have any status this year in Canada. So he wound up getting a job, I believe, an insurance job, if I'm not mistaken, and down here in Arizona. And all of a sudden, last week, somebody somewhere, I guess the tour, posted the exempt who's exempt for Canada this summer, and he's on the list. So there's a lot of confusion over, this whole, am I exempt based on what I did with this new tour? I know that Harrison Ott didn't really know what he was going to do. And to your point, I don't think a lot of people want to be traveling, you know, too far south to try to make it, you know, onto the Korn Ferry Tour and then onto the PGA Tour. They'd rather take their chances at Q School, but it really is. And then you throw in Liv. I have you ever seen it, Gary, this crazy and unpredictable? And I mean, if I were to look into a crystal ball, I tell you what, it would be as cloudy as the sky above my head right now here in Phoenix.
Yeah. No, nobody has any answers still, Rob. We've been talking about Liv and the PGA Tour now for a year and a half, if not longer. And it seems like we've gone in a huge circle, and we're still where we were, you know, months ago. Nobody has any answers. Nobody knows what's going to happen. You know, the PGA Tour is going ahead with its schedule. Liv is going ahead with his schedule. And from what I understand, Liv is scheduling events for 2025. So who knows where this is going to wind up? I'm in the courts, probably maybe again, but because they can't seem to come together.
And if Anthony Kim comes back to play on Liv,
yeah,
we can bring back the Greater Milwaukee Open. I mean, if it's going to be that kind of year, and we can just pull storylines out of a hat, I'd like to see the PGA Tour come back to both Wisconsin and Chicago during the summertime. And I think there's a lot of people like that. But I mean, I can't remember a more volatile time in professional golf.
I can't either. And you know, you mentioned Anthony Kim. He's the one guy that might make me want to watch Liv, Rob. He hasn't played in 10 years in anything, and I'm really curious. I mean, that guy was an unbelievable talent. He had a swagger about him that approached, you know, Tiger Woods type swagger. I mean, he was not afraid of anything, and he was a young guy playing on a Ryder Cup and winning points. Had such a great game, such a aggressive swing. And I can't wait to see if there's a lot of hype about him coming back to Liv, but I just might try to find the CW channel, Rob, and tune into this.
Yeah, I tell you, it's crazy stuff, crazy stuff. So that's why I actually wanted to start our podcast here on Talking.Golf, talking about a story that has garnered a lot of attention here that Gary wrote last week. And it had to do with the fact that Wisconsin has now 10 courses in the Golf Digest list of America's top 100 public courses, which makes it number one in the volume of those kind of courses in that list. And Gary, we're at well over 6,000 page views with that story, and rightly so. I mean, it is, I think, a head turner that we have that many great courses, and that it's Wisconsin, a state with most years a six-month season. However, if you do the math this year, and we'll segue from this into all these courses that are open already in Wisconsin, but if we can get a season into November, Gary, it's going to be a nine-month golf season.
Yeah, yeah, you're right, Rob. And, you know, 10 courses in the top 100 in America's top 100 public courses by Golf Digest. Subjective list. It's a subjective list, to be sure. But I think it just shows you the great topography we have in Wisconsin, Rob, between the central sand barrens and you know, Whistling Straits along a huge body of water, Lake Michigan. And we've got Century World, you know, carved out of trees up north. So much different variety, and they're all close to each other. I mean, you know, Century World and Lasonia and Kohler and Sand Valley, all these great courses are within a two-hour drive of each other, and I think that's what makes it special. And when you look, Rob, at the Midwest, Iowa has zero public courses among the top 100. Illinois has one, Cog Hill, I believe it is. Now, Illinois definitely has great, great private club golf, but only one public course in the top 100. Minnesota, I think, has three, and then Michigan has nine. Michigan's another great state for golf, but I mean, most of the states around us in the Midwest that have similar climate and similar topography aren't cracking the top 100 like we are. So, for a lot of reasons, Wisconsin deserves to be in that top spot.
You know, as we see now what has, you know, been, you know, developed out of this, you know, Century World's, you know, kind of the starting the whole destination golf concept in Wisconsin. I mean, why do you think everybody has been pulled here?
I think it's several reasons. I think it's because, you know, the quality and variety of the golf, but the fact that we're also getting all these major championships over the last 20 years, Rob, you know, the three PGAs, the Ryder Cup, the U.S. Open at Erin Hills, more stuff coming, four championships coming to Sand Valley. And I just think it's also, I think Wisconsin is a very hospitable state for golf, meaning that, you know, the local county and state governments are easy to work with, from what I understand, not only for developers, but for these organizations bringing in championships. So I think it's all those things combined that make us, you know, such a great state for public golf.
You mentioned in the story, Herb Kohler, Bob Lang, from Erin Hills, you know, Mike Kaiser and his family, you know, they helped get, you know, the bulk of those, courses on the list off the ground. You know, I'm not sure, you know, Central World being a corporate owned, golf club course, but you go back to John Jonas, who, you know, had that vision. You know, David Bachman at the Bullet Pinehurst Farms, you know, again, not involved anymore, much like Bob Lang at Erin Hills, not involved there, but got, you know, I don't think we can undersell, you know, to our listeners what, you know, those gentlemen, each in their own way have done to contribute. You wish that, you know, Bob Lang and Dave Bachman would still be involved with them because that was their dream. You know, the only one on that list that really doesn't have that person behind it would be Lasonia, right? And that was was that part of the American Baptist Assembly, or was that separate from that, you know, when they created the Lynx course?
You know, I don't know who owned it when it was first built, Rob, but yeah, the American Baptists owned the course for many, many, many years. So you're right, that's one course that doesn't have a developer per se, but you raise a good point that these developers, the Kohler family, Herb Kohler and now his son David, Bob Lang, and then Andy Ziegler, who took over, David Bachman and John Jonas, and now Pete McPartland up at Central World, the CEO there. They're all, you know, it takes developers with vision and resources to get these courses built. And thankfully we have an abundance of those type of people in our state.
You played the Lido up at Sand Valley. Could that course join this list?
It could. You know, it's a private club, but there is tee time availability for resort guests, Rob. So technically, I guess it would be considered, you know, by that standard, a public course. And then Sedge Valley, which opens up there July 1st up at Sand Valley. That course, some guys from the golf magazines have played it. I have not seen it yet, but it's getting rave reviews as a 5,900 yard course by Tom Doak that is just stunning. Both of those courses could eventually work their way into the top 100. I mean, we could wind up with a dozen, Rob, I think, here in 2 or 3 years.
And you mentioned, you know, others that, you know, have, I think, in the Wisconsin centric listing of top public courses are always on it. Troy Byrne, Wild Rock, Brown Deer Park, and then of course the golf courses in Lake Geneva. I think you could throw University Ridge on that list.
For sure.
Once upon a time, you know, and maybe still, you know, I've always enjoyed Trapper's Turn. The further down you drill, the more you realize that we've got some great, great golf courses. If those courses are, oh, by the way, they are not far behind. I mean, once upon a time, those would have been, you know, in the 70s, you know, before Century World was built in the early 80s, any one of those would have battled, you know, Brown County Golf Course or Brown Deer Park. You know, those Brown Deer Park and Brown County were probably the two oldest municipal courses that kind of had that stature. And now you just look at, I mean, it's an embarrassment of riches. You quote Jason Coughlin, who runs, you know, Wisconsin Golf Trips. And, you know, I don't think, you know, we've known Jason a long time. I don't think when he started that business, he ever thought that we would have this many options for people to, you know, to play golf at that would be truly destination golf courses.
Yeah, yeah. You mentioned some of those courses, Wild Rock, so-called second tier courses, and I say that only when in comparison to the, you know, the top 100 listing, because in my mind they're not second tier at all. Wild Rock, Brown County, Brown Deer, Turtleback and Rice Lake, Troyburn, the Lake Geneva stuff. You can go on and on. I mean, there's so many good courses in our state, and a lot of those courses, Rob, that didn't make the top 100 would certainly be, if you look at some other states in our nation, would certainly be in their top 5 or 10 golf courses in a lot of states.
And again, to put a bow on this part of our podcast, Gary, you know, Illinois with only one course in the top 100, there's a lot of money in Chicago. And
yeah,
we've seen it at all the, where, you know, all the stops on the major championships. I think the Jemsek family at Cog Hill, I'm guessing Cog is, and Dubs Grid has kind of fallen off that list, you know, and there was always a lot of tinkering going on with courses. I don't see any courses on this list that have really been tinkered with in Wisconsin.
No, not really. I mean, Lasonia, you know, had a massive tree removal on the Lynx course, I don't know, a decade or so ago. And Craig Haltom and his team have come in and, you know, spruced it up a little bit and redone the bunkers and that sort of thing. But no major, certainly no major rerouting or renovation or that type of thing. And, you know, and then Century World had the renovation. I guess we have to point that out.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, but as far as like the Kohler stuff and Sand Valley is pretty new still. Courses do need to, you know, do need to be updated. They're living, growing things. And after a decade or two, you know, in some areas, they might get a little stale and might need sprucing up. But you're right. By and large, these courses have stood the test of time and stood on their own merits.
Well, I tell you what, and then I just took the, Mike Davis, our friend, added a poll. If you haven't read this story, read Gary's story here about, Wisconsin's 10 golf courses in Golf Digest Top 100. And, Mike asked, how many of them have you played? And Gary, right now, and I'm trying to see if we've got, it doesn't say how many people have answered the poll, but right now the leading is 4-6. 32% of our readers have played it between 4 and 6 of these courses, and then 27% have played between 7 and 9. So, Gary, well over 50% have played almost every course on this list, and it's not cheap to do that.
No, it's not. When I posted the story to Twitter, one of the comments I got was, can I play these courses on a budget? And I think it was a facetious kind of question. And my answer to that is always when people complain about the cost of some of the golf courses in our state, and you're right, they're pricey, they're expensive, but, you know, there's 400 other public courses in the state that are, and the vast majority of which are very affordable. And I always tell people, I can't eat at the most expensive restaurant in town every night, but I can do it once a year. And in the meantime, I can go to some other pretty good restaurants that don't cost as much. So there's something for everybody out there. And I don't think people should get angry that some of these courses have green fees, because that's what makes this a desirable place to come to play golf for traveling golfers. They're spending a lot of money in our state, and I don't think we should begrudge the courses for having expensive tee times. I can't afford to play them all. Luckily, I've been able to play them all at one point or another, and I'm sure you have too, Rob, but there's lots of good golf beyond those courses in our state to play.
And last but not least on Talking.Golf for this week here, as the final week of February, I cannot believe how much time I've spent this month, Gary, updating course openings. I believe it was 2018 or 19. We had some courses open briefly in February. These courses that are opening, Gary, that I'm finding in on the announcements on Facebook, they're going to stay open, because – right now, it doesn't look like winter's coming back long enough and ferociously enough to make them want to close. And we're recording this on a Monday. The high temperature in Madison today, a little bit of rain, 64 degrees. It'll be 64 tomorrow, and then it drops to 27. Milwaukee, 53, 63, and then 39. The challenge this year, Gary, and this is the second time in less than a week that we've seen temperatures go from close to 60 to into the 20s. is this whole yo-yo effect. You're there. Yeah. I mean, what has this weather been like? And, is it, do you feel it's, I know you're going golfing tomorrow, down at, Geneva National.
Yes.
So is it comfortable enough to be outside and doing this?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm envisioning myself wearing a short sleeve shirt and maybe a sweater vest tomorrow, Rob, when I play on Tuesday at Geneva National. But, I was watching the weather forecast this morning, and we are in the middle or near the end of the warmest February on record in Wisconsin, or at least in the Milwaukee area, but I'm sure that's true statewide. And 23 of the 26 days now, the temperature has been above average, and in many cases, way above average. So it's a unicorn, Rob. It's one of those months that you have to take advantage of, because next year we could, you know, it could be 22 every day in February.
So it's made our list very challenging to compile. As of last night, I believe I saw close to 70 courses will be open at some point this week. The hard part, Gary, in compiling this list is they're not staying open. And in some parts of the state, they're opening, then closing, opening for three, closing for two. As we look at the forecast for the weekend, I found this little weather embed that we keep adding to this. And Sunday in Madison, it's going to be 70 degrees, our first 70-degree day of the year. Now, it was supposed to be 68 in Madison tomorrow. We're only going to 64. So take this with a grain of salt. But 61 Saturday, 70 on Sunday. In Madison, and then 55 in Milwaukee, and 59 on Sunday, Saturday and Sunday. So, I mean, this is going to continue, and I believe that I haven't added it yet, but one more county parks course is going to open this week, plus Lake Park is going to open the their executive course, par three course. So we've got, I think, almost five regulation-size 18-hole courses in Milwaukee. We've got three of the four in Madison. Gary, I don't know. And we're stretching this from Little River Country Club up in Marinette all the way down to courses. I think Ives Grove opened this week. And of course, the course in Spring Valley and Salem is open. So, I mean, we're talking border to border. We've got golf in February.
That's what's so unusual, Rob, because normally in almost every other year, there's a pretty substantial snow cover still, you know, in points north from Madison North. And when you get up way up north, you know, forget about it. There's no golf until, you know, April or in some cases early May. So what's so unusual is no snow cover anywhere. And so courses, you know, that normally don't open until late April are throwing open their doors in February. It's crazy. And it's all bonus golf for the owners and operators of these golf courses. They certainly didn't count on pulling in a ton of revenue in February, and so this is great for them.
And we'll close on this, Gary. I added to our course openings story today a video that I because it was a reel, a Facebook reel. I didn't know Dave Spengler knew about Facebook reels, but I recorded it. I screen recorded it on my phone, and then uploaded that to our YouTube account. Dave explains why some courses like his at Northbrook Golf and Grill in Luxembourg are not open. He took a tee, stuck it in the ground on a tee box. It went a quarter of the way into the ground and hit ice.
Yeah.
So, folks, if your course isn't open yet, please, please don't rush them. They know what they're doing. And in some areas, the ground just thaws differently than others. And,
right.
And I just hope that we aren't, you know, going to be here in 2 months and, you know, some of these 70 plus courses that have opened for periods of time, I hope we're not going to be writing about, you know, damage to the turf or, you know, looking on, you know, the Wisconsin Golf Group on Facebook and seeing, you know, reports of, you know, just damaged, you know, turf grass that hasn't come back and we're playing with temporary tees or temporary greens. I don't think it'll happen, Gary, but, again, I would also exercise patience for the golfers who want to play their course right here, right now.
Yeah, that's good advice, Rob. It's definitely a balancing act. You welcome that early season revenue that you normally don't get. It's great bonus cash for these golf courses, but at the same time, you don't want to really damage your golf course. And so it's a fine line they have to walk. I think in the southern part of the state, certainly, I mean, my lawn is soft as mush rub, so I don't think, you know, a deep frost is a problem, you know, when you get the southern, you know, 80 miles of the state and across. But you're right, when you get up north, there's still have been some cold nights, and there's still a little frost that goes deeper into the ground now.
It's crazy because two ski hills were still open when the golf courses below them also opened, Rib Mountain and Christmas Mountain. Again,
Colorado, Rob.
Caledonia has become the San Diego of the Midwest, and Rib Mountain and Christmas Mountain are now the Vail of the
Midwest.
I tell you, we are blessed, and we are blessed with great golf courses, whether they're open or not. If they're not open, they'll be open in due time. But Gary's going to go play the Trevino course at Geneva National. So, Gary, enjoy that. We can't wait to hear the report on that. And I know we'll have other breaking news to talk about next week. So let's call it a podcast for this week.
All right. Sounds good, Rob. Thank you.
All right. For Gary D'Amato, Rob Hernandez, this has been Talking.Golf on Wisconsin.Golf.